Welcome to the Apache Cassandra Corner, a community-driven podcast for all things Apache Cassandra. I am your host, Aaron Pletz. All right, well, welcome back, everyone. Today, once again, I'm joined by Ottavio Santana. Ottavio, how are you doing?
Hello, hello, everyone. Good morning, good evening, good night. So it's super happy to be here and talk about my new babies.
Yeah. So before we get, you know, going too much on your new books, let's just, you know, quick introduction, a little bit of your background. Who are you?
Oh, yes, yes.
For those who don't know.
My name is Ottavio Santana. I software engineer. I was born in Brazil, in the north area, Salvador City. It's a lovely place. And right now I live in Lisbon, Portugal. I am an award-winning software engineer in Octet. So I received several awards, mostly because of the open source, such as Duke Choice Award, JCP Awards, Eclipse Foundation Top Link, Eclipse Foundation Top Committer, and so on. Mm-hmm. I focus more in software architecture, Java, finance, and of course, database. And I love history, philosophy, and of course, travel around the world and meet new friends.
Well, excellent. Excellent. So, Ottavio, I did mention that you've been on the show before. I got a year-end summary from Spotify, right? You know, because I put this out on Spotify for podcasters, I think is what it's called now. So I get this year-end report, right? And it tells me that 11% of our new listeners from last year were from Brazil.
Whoa, that's amazing.
Right?
Yes.
And
I mean,
I directly attribute that to you because your episode was also one of the most frequently like listened to or the one that brought in the most new listeners from what I was told. So I think you have this large following in Brazil, and that totally makes sense once I know where you're from. But
oh, yes. That's super amazing. And I mean, in Brazil, we do have a huge software industry. We do have people working software engineer. We have huge success case. It's important to remember that Brazil is almost a continent, right?
So
we do have over 200 million people of population there. So we have a huge software industry. You do have several banks. I dare to say that when talk about finance and the globe, Brazil has the most advanced finance around the globe. So we do care about security, distributed database integration, and so on. So yes, super glad to hear that.
Yeah. So of course, you've released two books recently. Let's talk a little bit about those. Which one do you want to start with?
Oh, that's hard. Let's start with the one that I have a huge privilege of having you as reviewer of this book, of course. I will cover Jakarta Persistent with NoSQL Database.
Yeah. So what kind of brought this book along? The idea.
The goal was, okay, we do have several specific books around Java. Myself, for example, I wrote the book about Cassandra twice, one in Portuguese, another one in English. And they realized that, okay, it'd be amazing if I could write broadly around NoSQL database, what is that, the type of structure, replication, strategy, something more on the soft development perspective. Okay, if you go to this way, what security matters for you? It's important to mention, right, that NoSQL does not mean no security, no governance.
Right. No, that's important to point out. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, those things still matters. And I mix the concepts about NoSQL, the analysis between NoSQL types, the NoSQL production best practice, NoSQL in the cloud. A lot of people are still avoiding using something like database as a service, like Astra does. And let's be honest, if there is one person or one team who is capable to do the best support ever, is Data Stacks when talk about Cassandra. And why
seems
not
no getting
use
around
it?
That, yeah.
Yes, I mean, it's happened all the time. Why not using database as servers, especially when you do have developers? I mean, we are awful when you do Kubernetes. We are awful when you need to do administration database. Why not delegate those? And sometimes try to, okay, let's save a little bit of money today and have a huge nightmare because somebody forgets to do the backup restore.
Oh,
somebody
right,
forgets to do some security. Somebody forgets to do tuning in the database and so on. So, and I explain more about what is polyglot persistence, why we should care about that. I talk more about the newest specifications in Jakarta E word. That means Jakarta data and NoSQL, and then server integration with trips and pitfalls around NoSQL database.
Right. And you actually wrote some of the code that's behind Jakarta NoSQL, right? I mean, you're a maintainer on that, I think, if I remember right.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm a maintainer of both NoSQL and data. It's you have to do it. This week, for example, you released the milestone number one of Jakarta NoSQL and milestone number four of Jakarta Data. Jakarta Data is much mature, so we have the goal to release in Jakarta E11, hopefully this year. Jakarta Data is going to release this year with Jakarta 11, and Jakarta NoSQL, we are working hard to release next year.
Okay. Cool.
A lot of things coming out, especially because when you talk about Java, if you talk about enterprise architecture, most of the time, they will cover only relational database. Okay, I want to do enterprise, of course, relational database. No doubt about that, but right now, we are moving more to NoSQL database popularity, Cassandra popularity, and with these kinds, these kind of things happen, we are working closely to increase the number of layers or flavors around data. So NoSQL with graph, NoSQL with document, wild column, key value, and so time series and so on. So Jakarta NoSQL is one thing that I'm looking super closely and super happy to contribute on that.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. So so getting back to your book, you know, you said something interesting there about you know, how as developers, you know, we're not always, you know, really good about, you know, working with a database or implementing things like security or, you know, or knowing how to operate things like Kubernetes. And the idea is that we want developers really just to focus on writing code. Right.
Yes.
And you
and
know, you
unfortunately,
mentioned, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Unfortunately, I went to several companies. I saw several companies that see, okay, let's do the DevOps culture, right? The developers
right.
operation. And sometimes there is a misunderstanding about the integration between developers operation to don't have operation at all. So they destroy the operation area and delegate the whole configuration to developers. And of course, we are not good at that.
Yeah. You know, you did bring up another point too. I wanted to touch on about, you know, about using databases as a service, and you know, other managed offerings that are out there. And you know, and I think that those could be of a big help to a lot of developers, you know, who just don't want to have to manage a lot of the infrastructure. But you know, when I look at you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, before about Brazil and how it's kind of like an emerging tech area, you know, and how there's a big community there. But I've and maybe I'm wrong, but I've heard that they're not that far along in their cloud journey. So are you know, a lot of those dev shops in like Brazil, are they doing on-prem databases? Or are they, is I think there's an Amazon data center down there, right? São Paulo, I think, has a
Yes,
region.
we do.
I was just wondering what the breakdown is, if it's like most folks are doing on-prem or if they're starting to be more and more in the cloud or.
The popularity of cloud is increasing. We started doing a mistake in the cloud as well, not on-premise only right now. And we're going to talk about enterprise architecture for sure. The majority is on-premise, especially because they buy or they bought a huge amount of machines, a huge amount of servers. And we're still talking about regulation right now, right? So, I mean, we talk about finance and user informations. We need to make sure that information is not able to get out the country or the border of the country. And some huge organizations still using on-premise because some regulation, legislations, and things like that. But the startups right now, at least the majority, not only in Brazil, but in Europe in general, they are cloud native. And of course, everybody has your own definition about cloud native. But cloud native here is when application was born already in the cloud shape, using the JavaFX applications, the good practice, exploring more the service and the capability that cloud can offer to you and your team.
No, that's a good point too. It's like, yeah, when you're a startup and you know you're just beginning and maybe you have this great idea, yeah, you don't want to spend a lot of time, you know, managing on-premise, you know, infrastructure. So yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. A lot of the startups are much more apt to use like a cloud service or a managed offering in the cloud, for sure. For sure. I've seen that too.
Yeah, I mean, everybody talk about cloud. Cloud is amazing, of course, but when you think about an organization that has 100 engineers, 100,000 engineers, I mean, it's a huge amount of engineers. And we talk about governance, we talk about white hair, security. If right now on-premise is super mature, and like COBOL will not you won't die super soon. I don't believe that on-premise will die super soon because I mean you talk about huge legacy, huge product that has maturity, and sometimes it's cheaper keep it this way than try to move to the cloud native or do and cloud transformation and digital transformation of your application. I mean, if it's working, you have finance, and as you know, I mean, if there is some bug in the huge bank, we are talking about decreasing of stock option as well. So it's not super simple like a startup. Okay, I have only 10 users, so if something goes wrong, okay, my mom, my dad will complain about that. But when we talk about the biggest bank in Brazil, the biggest bank in US, okay, it's not that simple when you're off for seconds, even for seconds.
No, that's for sure. That's for sure. So we started with your Java persistence and with NoSQL book, and then we got on some tangents. Let's talk about your other one, your mastering the Java virtual machine book. I'd like to hear more about that one.
Oh, okay, that's nice because this one was a hard work. I wrote primarily in Portuguese, especially because at that time we didn't have much material around the JVM internals and in Portuguese. And then I realized that okay, we don't have in English either. So let's migrate that book. Let's let's use Java 21 as minimum requirement and then do it in English. So I spent some time creating and defining something that, okay, let's talk a little bit more about the complexity inside the JVM.
Right.
I mean, the trade-off of JVM. Of course, everybody knows about bytecode, but also the impact of using bytecode, because if you do have a bytecode, that means a byte instruction. We have a couple of instructions that is out the JVM. For example, the add and sub, we don't have to the type short and byte. We need to convert first to integer and then do the operation to translate again to byte and short.
Right.
Why?
Right.
Because if you do have, for example, operation of add with integer, with short, with long, with byte, with order, whatever, it won't be bytecode anymore. It will be mega code or something like that, because the structure will be huge. And in this book, I explain a little bit more about the internals. Of course, my favorite topic is the bytecode. I enjoy a lot, especially because the instruction go in the queue. So the optimization when you write codes, that's the main difference between Java and other language, because we do have like a twice optimization. So the optimization to convert your Java code to bytecode, and then on runtime, you do the optimization again using just-in-time compiler, however time optimization. So on this book, I cover the JVM architecture, of course, mostly using the OpenJDK and J9 perspective, because I contribute and contributed a lot on those JVMs. I explained the number of register that we do have. And I try to use as much as possible the specification, so this way you can understand broadly about the JVM. So, okay, what's PC counter to the JVM? So what register are shared among threads, or the one that use uniquely to that thread? For example, when I call a method, that is the Java stack that has a pool of operation, and this operation has a PC or program counter that's won by thread. We do have the method aria. We do have the class information, how does it work, and so on. So I try to put this information on the JIS book. The huge amount of JVMs, people still using that Java is just one JVM, but no.
Right, right.
We have a thousand of that. We have at least 25 JVMs. We do have TCKs. And also explain a little bit about the philosophy of frameworks. I mean, why do have frameworks in Java? Why it's super important? And this combination, this communication matters, especially when talk about strategy. So you can use reflection. So do the read of the information of your annotation on runtime. That brings you a trade-off. You can do that on build time using, for example, Java Annotation Processor, where you're going to read this annotation on the build time. However, it also brings you another trade-offs. And you can use proxies and so on. So the main goal of this, the second book, the Mastering the Java Virtual Machine, is to explain the internal of JVM, more about bytecode, the garbage collector structure, how it works, the types, the table recommendation. Okay, you have a serial, parallel, T1, Shenandoah, and so on. So
sure.
What's the recommendation for use, the command for use? And my biggest issue or my biggest challenge in this book was to choose only 10 topics, because my first version was over, it was over 400 or 600 pages. So I need to decrease a little bit. Otherwise, it become like an over helmet of information.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Otavio, with with my last book too. It's like I had a long list of things that I wanted to talk to and I wanted to dig in. And it just at just the end of the day, it's like, oh, you can only do so much. So yeah, you have to pick and choose about what you want to focus on for sure, for sure.
Yes, I mean, the methodology matters, and there is this lovely book called Essentialism that's mentioned that the power of the no, right? So you need to refuse something to focus on what matters, and I did exactly on this book. So I need to remove a couple of pages, so I remove more page than I keep it to keep it simple, to keep it much easier to read, to understand, and so on.
So of course, when you talk about JVM performance optimization, the one thing that most Cassandra people hear when you say that is, oh, so you must be talking about garbage collection. Can you maybe talk about some of the newer garbage collectors? I know the two that I know that are new that we haven't had a chance to use a lot of in Cassandra yet, just because I think Cassandra in production right now is limited to Java 11. But maybe you could talk through some of the differences of like the Shenandoah collector and then like ZGC as well.
Yes, I mentioned both in the book. So the Jew one, I guess everybody knows, right? So and it's still my favorite one. The main goal is to break down the piece of memory in equal size. And the main goal is to reduce or avoid the stop of the word. That's
Stop the
happened
world.
mostly. That's happened most of the time because the fragmentation of memory. I mean, we swap, we know what information I use anymore, but I need to defrag this memory information. So this one is the G1 book, the G1 garbage collector. Okay. So right now it's more, or at least wide used one. The second one that I enjoy is the Z garbage collector because it puts a pointer to your virtual memory in the physical memory. The goal is with this pointer, it will avoid more piles on your garbage collector. So I, of course, I mean, briefly how it's work. Of course, it's a huge complex around that, but the main goal and the main challenge of any garbage collector for sure is to decrease the piles of your application, or at least avoid that. Okay, I have several processes happen, but the majority is on garbage collectors. No, the main goal is to avoid that exactly like that. And we do have in the book some recommendation about why you should avoid ergonomics, the formulas of ergonomics. So ergonomics is the premature optimization, it's the root of the evil. And we do have recommendation, for example, okay, if you have more than two cores and we have over 4 gigabytes, and you want to have a low latency effect, so the Z garbage collector might be your guy, your choice for that. If you do have one single core, of course, it doesn't make sense to use parallel G1 or Z garbage collector, especially because it will use a lot of power of the CPU to make it possible. And the number of piles of the Z garbage collector, the goal is to be lesser than 1 millisecond because of those pointers to avoid fragmentation. And in the book, I remember that we do have several comparison, include in put several reference, include the Brunnenberg presentation, the Vox version, and so on. So, I still enjoy the G1, especially because this
Yeah, I
one
kind of like
is the one
G1
that
too.
I, yeah, I do have the majority of my products and my consulting service running. I start to using the Z garbage collector, especially because the tail latency effect that's super low.
Yeah.
I had several conversations with several people from several organizations, companies, to mention that in the book, of course. It's super worth to read, to try. I put the comments how to use the Z garbage collector. As I mentioned, the mapping between the physical memory, the virtual memory, especially to lead into the fragmentation, it is great. But of course, I put the comments. So how to activate the Z garbage collector, the memory, the pulse, milliseconds configuration, and so on. But still, so G1 is still my favorite one, even with Java 21.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, obviously with having a history of running Cassandra a lot, I've worked a lot with both CMS and with G1, and yeah, I have to say I much prefer G1 myself. Absolutely. Yeah.
I kind of enjoy the idea of the liveness that we do have in G1, for example, that okay, instead of move my object that is alive or that is dead, what I do. So I check the small piece blocks of memory, the one that has the highest liveness. That's me, okay, I have a lot of objects died that I move the one that is alive, and then I'm done. So I don't need to handle with fragmentation of memory. So it's super simple, it's super smart, it's super bright. So that's why I still enjoying the G1 instead of the G garbage collector. But that's I'm for me it's still promise. Of course I need to have more maturity to use it, but for me the G1 is still the winner.
Excellent. That's good to hear. That's good to hear. So hey, Ottavio, in closing, what would you like our listeners, who are mostly Cassandra people, what would you like them to know about your books?
Okay. So about the mastery of the Java Virtual Machine. So I did a cover about several aspects of the Java Virtual Machine, of course, the garbage collector, the concept, the architecture of the VM, what's the graph VM, what is the trade-off to convert your application to native, reflection, Java Annotation Processor, the framework philosophy, and so on. So some principle of reactive programming and scalable application. And as you know, so several things that sometimes you did not realize will impact your Java application. So if you want to know more about these aspects of JVM, the impact of application, the principle of garbage collector, the types of garbage collectors, we explain the memory configuration recommendation of using this garbage collector. The Mastering the Java Virtual Machine is a book for you. So it's a good start for
Yeah, and
it.
then what about the NoSQL one?
The NoSQL one you cover broadly, especially the architectural perspective. So I will cover the principle, the design, the replication strategy, the difference between those among NoSQL database, how to use that with Java, exploring more the Java specification. Of course, I will mention Cassandra, the pitfalls of NoSQL in cloud, why not use database as a service. Please use it as much as possible because it will avoid you a huge nightmare, especially in production
That's right. That's
in
right.
the long term. And of course, the principle of design architecture, the patterns to explore, and how to use NoSQL with no bean validation to put constraint in your data. Remember, NoSQL does not mean no security, no constraint, no no data reliability on your system or your organization. So, and that's why I prefer to write those different books. So specific focus. So Java developer and Cassandra developer. It's those are good books to read and say a little bit more about those aspects.
Excellent. And those are really good tips. And you know, I know you said this at the beginning too, but I really like that statement you make about how NoSQL doesn't mean no security. It doesn't mean no schema. It doesn't mean no, you know, modeling. It's you really do have to think about those things. It's yeah.
Yes.
I think that's a good way to put it.
Mainly when you talk about your organization, right? I mean, it's impossible to don't forget that right now banks and finance are using that a lot. And those constraints is too valid. The data governance is too valid.
That's right.
I mean,
that's right.
NoSQL doesn't mean the data doesn't matter. I mean, one corruption data means a lot of money, thousand
that's
money,
right.
million money. So, yes, so that's why I decided to write more about this and bring more enterprise architecture perspective and also database with Java.
Yep. Yep. Well, hey, Ottavio, once again, it's been so great to have you on. You'll have to let me know when you write another one, and you know, hey, we'll maybe bring you back again.
Oh, nice. So, as I mentioned to you, I will avoid to write twice in the year. So it's a huge nightmare, a lot of work.
Oh,
so,
I know. Yeah, I've done that before too. Just it's tiring to write two books in a year.
Yes, starting. So it's my mistake number one and advice. So write book is amazing, but spend a lot of time and avoid to write twice in the year. So brief a little bit more, write at least one by year. Or even with more cadence, like, okay, write one book every 3 years, 4 years, but never do it twice a year.
Right, right. All right, Ottavio, it's been great talking to you. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's all for today. Thank you for listening to the Apache Cassandra Corner. Apache Cassandra is a registered trademark of the Apache Software Foundation. Thank you, and have a great day.